Today's shiur is Masecht of Metzia Daf Chaf, and we will begin on Daf Yotes Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan Motza Shoiver. If a receipt was found that indicates that the husband paid his ksuba to the wife, so says the Braisa, Bezman She'isha Moida, if the Isha agrees that indeed, the woman agrees that indeed her ksuba was paid off, then Yachzlabal, we return that receipt to the husband. Eini Shemoida. So here we have an argument. The husband says that the receipt is indeed accurate and represents that he paid off the ksuba. The wife says it's inaccurate. So says the Brais, lo yachzal, lo yachzal. Neither of them, it should be left. Ask the Gemara, it says in the Brais, Bezman Shemoida Mias, if the woman is agreeable that Haksuba was paid off and that the shoiver is accurate, then the aloch is yachs labal, that the aloch is we give back that shoiver, that receipt to the husband. Ask the Gemara for lechish, tell the cost for litain benissin, for nisna atishrei. Maybe, although the date of the shoiver is for nisin, it actually wasn't given until tishrei, for that is when the ksuba was paid off. However, for Oslozovnis Luxubas, Bitaivis Anna, Minisina Tishrei. We know, as we learned, particularly when we learned Masechta Ksubas, there's a market, you could sell a ksuba. When, obviously, when somebody sells a ksuba, they sell it for a lot less. When a woman sells a ksuba, they sell it for a lot less than the face value of the ksuba. For two obvious reasons. Number one, the ksuba may never be collectible. Because if she dies before he does, then the ksuba is not—he's not obligated to pay the ksuba. Furthermore, even if the husband will die before the wife or will ultimately divorce her, it could take years until that happens. And if she paid for the lekuchas paid for the ksuba, that they may never or certainly take a long time to collect. So what happened here was that perhaps asked the Gemara. The wife, the shoiver is written with a date of Rosh Chodesh Nissan, but she didn't actually collect the ksuba and write the shoiver until Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, but in the meantime, in that time period, she sold the ksuba to somebody else, and now those individuals are getting cheated because they're the ones that deserve the ksuba. Leichish asked the Gemara that maybe she sold the ksuba to somebody, Menissin Vatishrei, or Mapak Leila Shoiver, and now the Shoiver that she is saying is an accurate Shoiver that has the date of Nissin, and the Lekuchas will be cheated. Answers the Gemara, Amarava. This is not a concern. Why? Because Shmami no Isil de Shmuel. The reason that this is not really a legitimate concern is for a din that Shmuel says. It's a difficult din to understand, but it's what Shmuel says is the halacha. Dama Shmuel, hamoichesh tachoyv l'chaveroi, v'chazroi u'mochol, mochol. We know, even nowadays, and certainly in the times of Chazal, there's a market, there's a business that you could sell receivables. That means if you owe me money, I have a document that says you owe me money, I could sell that document, selling receivables. Shmuel tells us a gewaldige chiddush. Let's say you owe me money, and you take that document that indicates you owe me money, and you sell it to someone else. So ostensibly, I should have no right to make a move regarding this document. Here, the halacha says Shmuel, that even though the malva sold the document, the halacha is I could still be moichel the obligation. A big machlokes rishonim, why? Some rishonim explain, because midaraisa, one really can't sell receivables. One can't sell shtari chayiv. The entire din that shtari chayiv could be sold is only midarabonim. So therefore, since this sale is not really valid midaraisa, the malva retains the right to be moichel the chayiv. Another pshat that the Rabbeinu Tam suggests, interesting pshat, is that every document, he says, every shtar chayiv has two aspects to it. One aspect is the money. The document says that Reuven owes Shimon whatever amount of money. But the other part of the document represents a personal obligation that the loiver owes the malva money. He borrowed money and he has to repay it. Says Rabbeinu Tam, the financial part, the dollars and cents, that you could sell. Instead of owing me the money, you owe somebody else the money. But the personal obligation, which is a significant part of the shtar, that you can't sell. And since that can't be sold, the malva, even after he sells the shtar, retains the right to sell it. A third pshat that I'll quote is another pshat that the Rishonim suggest, is if the malva were to go and sell the document to someone else, and now that other individual comes in the place of the malva to the loiver and say, pay me what you owe, the loiver says, I don't know who you are. La bal devarim didiat. You're not my, I don't know you, I never borrowed money from you. And therefore, the halacha is that someone who sells a shtar chayiv always has the ability to be meichel, but fill a yarish meichel. Not only can the person who's the malva, but even the malva's yarshim, if the malva is no longer here, be meichel the chayiv. So now there are two ways of understanding the Gemara. So here, the ksuba is obviously written to the woman. So since the woman always, as Shmuel teaches us, has the right to be meichel the ksuba, so when she says that she was paid the ksuba by her husband, she has a migui which to be believed with, because she could have been meichel the chayiv. Another way of explaining the Rishonim suggest is that since the woman always, as Shmuel just taught us, has the right to be meichel the chayiv, so since she has that right to be meichel the chayiv, so when she says that she was paid, even if she wasn't paid, it's equal to saying that I'm being meichel the obligation, and therefore we trust her. An interesting machloikas Rishonim, not specific to this case, but in every situation, is as follows. Let's say the case that we just discussed, where a malva goes and sells, the malva first goes and sells the obligation, goes and sells the receivable, and after he goes and he sells the obligation, he's meichel the loiver. So the person who ended up buying that receivable from him ends up with nothing. What recourse does that customer have to the malva? And I saw three pshatim in the Rishonim. Three approaches. Some Rishonim say that the customer has absolutely no recourse to the malva. A customer should have come to the shir, and he would know that the halach is that even after the malva sells the chayiv, he loses, he still has the right to be meichel the chayiv, and that's the risk he takes in buying the obligation. That's one approach. Another approach that the Rishonim suggests is that if the malva will turn around and be meichel the chayiv of a shtar that he sold, he will have to pay back to the person who bought it for him whatever he paid. You can't have your cake and eat it too. And a third approach, according to that approach, what would he have to pay back? He would have to pay whatever he got paid. Now, as we said earlier, whenever you're selling a receivable, you're not going to get dollar for dollar what the receivable represents. The person who's buying your receivable is going to buy it at a discount. So that's all the Rishonim say the malva is entitled to. A third approach that some Rishonim suggest is not only does the malva have to pay back the customer, but he not only have to pay him back what he actually received, but he actually has to pay him back the full value of the chayiv, because that's what the customer expected to get. He, by his action of being meichel the chayiv, takes away that opportunity from the customer, and that's what he has to repay him. Abaye Amar, afil teima leis d'Shmuel. Even if we don't agree with Shmuel, if a wife says that the shayver that is being now presented is an accurate document, we follow what she says. Because why? Because hocha v'mayiskinen, b'sheshtar ksuba yoyitz metachas yada. Where she's holding the ksuba. And the fact that she's holding the ksuba is the best indication that she did not sell the ksuba. And as the Rishonim explain, and I'll tell you how the Rishonim explain it, they ask a question. That means the fact that she's holding it is a proof that she didn't sell the ksuba, because if she had sold the ksuba, her customer would be holding the ksuba, not she. Ask the Rishonim, perhaps she sold the ksuba with a kinyan agaf, that the halacha is you don't have to give the ksuba, you don't have to give the shtar to the customer. So why is this such a proof, the fact that she's holding the ksuba? So they explain as follows. Of course, if somebody steals a regular shtar, the fact that the customer is not holding the shtar is not a proof one way or another, was there or was there not a transaction. But when a wife sells her ksuba while she's still married to a customer, the customer knows that he has to be concerned that perhaps the wife is going to turn around and make a conspiracy with her husband. So there is no husband, there is no customer in the world, explained the Rishonim, that will agree to buy this ksuba without actually receiving the ksuba. So the fact that she's holding the ksuba is the best proof that it was never sold. How does Rava respond to this? Rava, me'imishum shtar ksuba, if your proof is the fact that she's holding the ksuba, that is not really enough of a proof. For chayshinen l'shtay ksubas, maybe there are two ksubas. One ksuba is the ksuba that she gave to the customer, another one is she held on to herself. V'bay amar. Chada, number one, l'shtay ksubas l'chayshinen. We're never really worried about two ksubas. People aren't those kind of... When, if we're going to start worrying about that, then ein l'dav asoif. V'oid, furthermore, Shoiv Bizmanatarv. He says a very big chiddush. He says that the halacha is, this goes back to, as we start finishing these sugyas, we go back to the beginning, Daf Yud Gimel. Abaye says as follows. Abaye says if there's a date of the ksuba, the date of the shoiv that we began to share with, was Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And what is our concern? That although the date of the shoiv is Rosh Chodesh Nissan, perhaps was not actually presented until Rosh Chodesh Tisrei, says Abaye, if ultimately the shoiver is used, we follow the original date. Because Abaye's opinion, Abaye Tamei, Dam Eid B'chsoim Ezeichon Leidah. Whenever you have a document, if the document is actually used, we go back to the original date. And since here the original date is Rosh Chodesh Nissan, that's the date that we follow. And therefore it is considered as if the husband paid it up in Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And therefore even if she sold it afterwards, it's a meaningless sale. Actually, I saw a very interesting psak halacha that the Shem Tzion Balacha quotes based on this concept of Eidah B'chsoim Mezoichon Leidah. He says the following shaila. There was a Rav, you know, we asked the Rabbonim to sell the chametz on our behalf on Erev Pesach. But they have to be careful to sell the chametz before the Zman Isser. Because once it's Osir to have chametz, then you're not able to sell it. So there was a Rav who forgot to sell it in the right time, whatever reason. It only got sold in the afternoon. So it's too late. So what happens here? So the Paiskin want to suggest, since according to Abaye, Eidah B'chsoim Ezeichon Leidah, so we look at the date of the Mechiras Chametz, and if the date is from the beginning of Erev Pesach, even though the actual transaction did not take place till later in the day, it's valid because we go back with the date to the beginning of the day, and it's a reason we could perhaps validate the Mechiras Chametz. We should never have such a shaila. Says the Mishnah, Matzah Igrishum. Igrishum, we discussed the other day, means that let's say a malva comes to collect his debt from the loiva, and the loiva can't, says he doesn't have the ability, doesn't have the money to pay, and Bezdin goes and designates that the malva could take from his property. Igrishum is such a document that gives the malva the right to take property of the loiva. The Mefarsh and the Rishonim already discussed why is it called Igrishum? It should be called Shtarshum. So I saw a number of pshatim. One pshat is that sometimes the loiva doesn't have property in this locale where the malva is coming to the Bezdin. He has the property in another city. So Bezdin of this city will write a letter to the Bezdin of the other city that they could confiscate property from the loiva. That's why it's called an igros. Another pshat that the Shita suggests, very interesting pshat. He says, even though we're confiscating, Bezdin is confiscating property from the loiva, Bezdin wants still as much as possible to protect the loiva. So what Bezdin does is they assess the value of a property or properties of the loiva to satisfy his bali chayv. But before they actually give the malva the right to collect based on that assessment, they publicize their assessment, because maybe there's somebody who's going to be willing to pay more than Beis Din assessed, so to the benefit of the loiva. So it's called an igros. They send it out as a letter, put it, so to speak, to a public bid. Igros mazon means that a husband sometimes marries a woman with children, and he obligates himself to support those children. Shtarei chalitza miunim. Chalitza, we know, miun, we know, means that if a girl who's a ketana and doesn't have a father, so her mother or her brothers can marry off. But that kedusha is only kedusha to rabbanon. The halacha, as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, is that the girl can be a man, she could annul the marriage, as long as she's not a gedola, and if it's recorded in a document. Shtari berurin, the Gemara will explain soon what shtari berurin means. V'kol ma'is Beis Din, the halacha in all these situations is, hareza yachser, we can return it to the holder. We don't have to be concerned that there's something wrong with these documents. Says the Mishnah, matzah b'chafisa b'deluskma, a document was found in one of these types of containers that we will again identify in the Gemara, or if somebody found a tachra shel shtaris, or a gudah shel shtaris, a bundle of documents, hareza yachsa, we give it back to the malva. The kama a gudah shel shtaris, how many documents are considered a gudah shel shtaris? Shloish shekshurim zebezeh, three documents that are together. Machloikis hapoiskim, how far, now that we give back this document to the malva, how much power does the malva have a right to use these documents? Some poiskim say, I think it's the opinion of the Shach, that they only have the malva only has the right to collect for the nechasim nechayim of the loiva. It was a document that was found in the street. It was a document that was not clear, and therefore we have to be a little stricter. Others say that it's obvious that it belongs to the malva, and we could even collect with it from the chasim shabbatim. Rav Shimon Gamliel, and the way most Mefarshim explain, Rav Shimon Gamliel is not arguing with the Tanakhama. He's sort of focusing and he's qualifying what the Tanakhama says. Echad haloiva mishloisha yachsel aloiva. Even though, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, we just said if we found these documents, we return it to the malva, not always. We can't ignore the facts. We have to look at the circumstances. So if there's one bundle of documents that represent that one loiva with three malvin, so who can we assume is the individual who lost the documents? The loiva. Because it's three malvin and one loiva. And they're yachsel loiva. On the other hand, shloisha halovim in echot, if there's three loivin and one malva, it's obvious that who dropped it? Yachsel malva. Matzah shtar b'shteroysev. If a shtar was found amongst his documents, and a person doesn't know, did it get paid up? Did it not get paid up? The halacha is, it should be left, he can't use it. But what will be the halacha if the loiva agrees that it has not been paid up? Then the malva gets back the shtar. Ask the rishonim, isn't that a difficult psak to understand? As I said, when we began this sugya, the Mishnah Daf Yud Beis taught us that if somebody finds a shtar in the street, even if the loiva agrees that the shtar should be still by the malva, they didn't pay up the debt, the halach is we don't give it back to the malva. Yet here we're saying that if the loiva is agreeable, we do give it back to the malva. So the Rishonim give a very nice teretz, again, speaking to the heart of our sugyas. They say as follows. When we began the sugya, we were speaking about a situation where a shtar was found in the street. And as the Gemara clearly indicated more than once, a shtar found in the street has a reyesa. There's something wrong here. And if it has a reyesa, that's why we don't give it back to the malva. Here there's no reyesa, or not such a significant reyesa. It was found between the shtaris, and he doesn't know what is the status. Therefore, here, if the loiva agrees that the shtar should be returned to the malva, it is. At Shiyov Eliyo, Farshim also discussed what will happen when Eliyo Navi comes. You know, the Gemara, especially in the next Perek in Tzeshem, is going to use this concept, Yimunach at Shiyov Eliyo. And when Eliyo comes, and Eliyo is going to able to answer every question, even if he is. He's only an Eid Echad. So I saw a beautiful teretz. When Eliyahu HaNavi comes, the world's going to be an honest world. People are going to say the truth all the time. So here, we could have an argument between two people, and one person's trying to damage the other person. In the world of Eliyahu HaNavi, people are going to be honest. Im yesh imam simpainus. This is another case. As Rashi says, this is an entirely new case, which refers, simpainus is a shaver. Simpainus is another way of describing something as a receipt. And what happens here is that there's a shaver found, the malva finds a shaver amongst his documents. And he doesn't know why does he have it. Does it represent that the loiva gave it back to him, and he did pay off the chayiv? Or is it that he just prepared the shaiva, but he never actually used it? So the question is, does he collect the chayiv again or not? Says the Mishnah, and we'll explain this at length in the Gemara Mitzvah, Yasim Hashem Supinus, he has to consider the debt satisfied, and he can't collect the chayiv. Ask the Gemara, we began with Shtari Berurim. Ask the Gemara, my Shtari Berurim, what does Shtari Berurim actually mean? Answers the Gemara, Hocha Tergmo, Shtari Tanaisa. That means, when parties, when litigants come to Din Torah, they prepare documents, they prepare legal briefs indicating their claims. And these are the Shtar Berurin, and most Mepharshim suggest that one, and we'll talk about this in the Masechta Sanhedrin, that once a Shtar Berurin, once they put their claims to Shtar Berurin, they can't change their claims, because otherwise we'll never end the Din Torah. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Eimer, a Shtar Berurin means Zebar Layachad, Zebar Layachad. Which means, as we will discuss in Mitzvah Shem Masech the Sanhedrin, one of the ways of having a Din Torah is both litigants, each litigant chooses a buyer, and Zebayer Layachad, Zebayer Layachad, and then they choose a third individual, the Shalish. And this is the Shtar Berurin, which indicates who they're choosing to be their buyer. Here too we have a Machlaikis. If somebody chose a buyer and committed it to a Shtar, can he retract? Well, to when can he retract? Some Rishonim say that once he picked him and he committed to a writing, he can't change his mind. Others say until the Beis Din actually issues a psak or starts deliberating in a psak, he could change and ask for a different buyer. Furthermore, the Mishnah said, the kol masa Beis Din hareze yachzer. Says the Gemara, we just had this Gemara the other day in Daf Yud Ches. Hu gita da ashtakach bei dina de Rav Huna. There was a get found in the Beis Din Rav Huna, davik sibei, that the get said, "B'shvirei masal dal rochus nara," that this get was written in the city Shviri that is by the river Rochus. And the Rishonim discuss, I think I mentioned this, does a get have to actually indicate the name of the city where it was written? Some, the Beis Yosef discusses this, some say it's essential part of the wording of the get, others say that it's not essential, the only time it has to say it, our meaning is that we do write it. The only time that it has to say it is if there are two cities with the same name, how are we able to identify in which city was it actually written? By writing the river, that would be a way of identifying the city. Here the get was found on the floor. Amarava, and as we discussed, the shliach and the husband all come and say, this is the get that was lost. Amar Rafuna, Cheshina L'Shnei Shviri. We have to be concerned, maybe there's another city that also has the same name, that also has the same people with the same names, and that this get fell from them. There are two approaches in the Rishonim how to understand what Rav Huna is saying. Some say Rav Huna was actually saying a psak halacha, that we have to always be concerned about this. Others say Rav Huna wasn't issuing a definitive psak. Rav Huna was actually asking a question. Does the halacha require us to have this concern? Amalei Rav Chisda Rabba. So Rav Chisda told Rabba, "Took ayin, look into this issue." The urta boilei Rav Huna minach. Tonight Rav Huna is going to ask you for your opinion. So especially if you follow the opinion, Rav Huna himself had a question. We understand Rav Huna wasn't sure, so he wanted to get Rava's opinion. Even if we learn the opinion, Rav Huna knew what he wanted. He still wanted to get Rabba's opinion. Nafkach tach v'ashkach. So Rabba started analyzing the shaila. And he said, our Mishnah says, Kol Masa Beis Din, Hareza Yachser. The our Mishnah says that if you find something, if it's validated in Beis Din, you can give it back. Amle Rav Amram L'Rabba. So Rav Amram said to Rabbi, I don't understand what you're doing. Hechi poshet mari surim emayna. Masi bezdin refers to shtar choiv. How could you learn dinei eishes ish, a get, from mammon? So Tosis points out that obviously Rav Amram was saying to Rabbi that we treat Isser more stringently than we treat mammon. As Tosis, that's not accurate. The halacha is that by Isser we follow Roiv. By mammon, there's a klal, there's a rule, ein holchem b'mammon achar Roiv. So why is the Gemara assuming that Isser is more stringent than mammon? So Tosis says two turutzim. One Teretz Tosfos says is here we're referring to the Isser Eishes Ish. And Isser Eishes Ish is particularly stringent, and that's why we're more stringent. The Gemara is saying, Rav Amram saying to Rabbi, you can't learn Eishes Ish from Mammon. Another Teretz Tosfos says is that by Mammon, there's no concern of Laz. That means if we give back the Shtar Chayiv and the Malva collects when he wasn't supposed to collect, nobody's reputation is on the line. By an Eishes Ish, if we allow her to get remarried, and then there's rumors, there's a concern, was she really divorced, we end up with a question that people may say that her children from the second marriage are mamzerim. And that's why we're more concerned by an Eishes Ish than we are by mammon. What's the nafkamina between the two terutzim of Tosfos? The nafkamina between the two terutzim of Tosfos is if we say that it has to do with Mises Bezdin, not every Issa Erva has a Mises Bezdin. But if it has to do with Laz, all situation of Erva could cause Laz. Amalei, she said, Tarda. Tarda Poshab Shah means you fool. Shtar Chlutze Meuntanan. Amish is not only talking about Shtar Chayiv. Amish is only speaking about Shtar Chalitze Meun, which is also Isser. So we see that even by Shtar Isser, we do return it. So the Mefarshim asked the obvious question. The Mishnah is explicit. What's happening here? So I saw two turutzim to this question also. One turutz is, a little hard to explain, is that he was focusing on the line of Kol Ma'aseh Bezdin. He didn't focus on the next line, which is hard to understand. The Mishnah is one line after the next. The other turutz I saw is as follows. Even though Shtari Chali, and this is the Shak Levatari of the Gemara, even though Shtari Chalitzu Miyun do speak to Isser, the Shtari Chalitzu Miyun are very different than a Shtar Get. Why? A Shtar Get doesn't only serve as a Raya, as a proof that this couple got divorced, but the Shtar Raya also serves as the actual means, vehicle, how they got divorced. On the other hand, Shtari Chalitzu Miyun don't create the divorce. All Shtar Chalitza Miyun do is they're a proof that there was a divorce. And therefore, Rava assumed you can't learn the halacha of a get, which creates the get, creates the divorce, from the halachas of Shtar Chalitza. Rava said if they talk to Isser, it doesn't make a difference if they serve or don't serve the same purpose. Says the Gemara, Paka Arza de Bei Rav, the beam on which the building was standing collapsed. Mar Amar Mishum Lasa Dadi, or Mar Amar Mishum Lasa Dadi Paka. Rava and Rav Amram were arguing, as the Mashal explains, who learned wrong Pshat and who caused that. And this is nothing that they were proud of, he says. But who was the one that learned the wrong Pshat and who was the one that got called Tarda, that because of him, the beams of the Beis Medrash collapsed? The Ben Yoyada, whenever you have this type of a Gemara where they call each other with a name, Tarda means a lunatic. Whenever you have somebody calling each other with this kind of a name, it's difficult to understand how such great people called each other this way. So Ben Yoyada has a very interesting pshat. He says as follows. Nobody, Chas V'Shalom, called each other Tarda, which means a lunatic. What they did, what he said was two words. Tar-da. Tar means to wake up. Wake up and learn the Mishnah properly, and you'll see that your proof is not a good proof. However, when it was pronounced, when it was articulated, it sounded like Tarda, like he was calling him a lunatic. But not that Chas V'Shalom, such words were used. We learned in the Mishnah, Matzah B'Chafisa D'Luskma, if these documents were found in these containers. Astigma Mai Chafisa, Amrava B'Bachana, Chaymas Ketana. It's a small flask, small pouch. Maidaluskma, Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, Plaska de Sabi. It's a larger container, pouch, in which older people keep their items. Taisva says that just because you find the shtaris in a pouch, and the person is able to say, my shtaris were in a pouch, that's not enough of a simon. He has to be able to say a simon in the pouch, what makes his pouch unique. The Shach disagrees. The Shach says, saying that my shtaris were in a pouch is enough. So here the Shach actually is more lenient than Taisus. On the other hand, there's a chumra that Shach has over Taisus. The Shach says we have to be concerned with Shela, that maybe somebody lent his pouch out. Taisus is not concerned for that. So we learned in the Mishnah, Tachrish Shtaris are good as Shtaris. Tan Rabbanan, Kamu Tachrish Shtaris, how much is considered a file of Shtaris? Shloisha Kruchen Zerbezeh, three Shtaris together. The Kamahi Agudish Shtaris, what's considered a bunch of Shtaris? Shloisha Kshurin Zerbezeh. Says the Gemara, Sham Mina, it seems that our Mishnah is teaching us a subject that we'll discuss in Mitzvah Shem in the next parak, that Kesher Simon, that being able to say that the shtaris were tied together and what kind of knot they had is an adequate simon. Says the Gemara, Hotani Rabchi Shloisha Kruchi Zebzeh, says he, no, they don't have to be tied, they're just put together. Ask the Gemara, if they're not tied, so what's the difference between a tachruch and an aguda? Answers the Gemara, the difference is as follows. Tachruch kol chad v'chad b'roish d'chavrei. Aguda d'rama hadadi. Which means as follows. And aguda is very easy to explain, so we'll explain that first. We're talking about three shtaris, and he has one shtar on top of the other shtar, and they're rolled up that way. A tachruch is as follows. When somebody rolls up a shtar, they usually roll it up from the bottom to the top. Why? Because when you open it, you want to be opening up the top first to read the shtar from the top to the bottom. So what happened here is he rolled up the first star, and then he put the second star on top of the first star, rolled it up that way, and then he put the third star on top of the second star, and that's how the three stars were rolled up. My makris. So if somebody found these stars together in whatever fashion that we just described, what is the announcement that the finder makes? Minyan. He announces that he found three shtaris. Ask the Gemara, if that's part of his announcement, so why does that Mishnah speak about Ma'ir Yatulsa? Why does he have to announce three shtaris? Why does the Mishnah have to speak about three shtaris? Afil Treinam explain the Mefarshim. If we're going to say, the Rishonim explains, Rashi says it already, if we're going to explain the Mishnah that the person who makes the announcement doesn't announce how many shtaris there are, we can understand why he has to say why there has to be at least three. Why? Because if I announce I found shtaris, and you come and say there were two shtaris, you might have made a safe bet. Because if I said shtaris, it has to be at least two. So then, by you saying that there were two shtaris, it's not a real proof that you really lost it. You took a safe bet. But if you'll say three, that means you knew what you're talking about. How do you know to say three? You could have said 30. But if I'm announcing the number, and all you have to do is give further simonim, so why does that have to be talking about three stars? I'll say I found two stars, and now you'll come and say how they were stored. It must be that with that I, who found the stars, all I announce is stars. I found stars, and you have to say the right number. Kramer Avina, Tiva Machris. The same like by money. If somebody founds money, we'll discuss it more in the next parak, he doesn't say how much money, he just says, I found money. Hachanami, and the loser has to now say, how much money did he lose? Hachanami, Shtari Machris, he just announces that he found Shtaris. And as the Rishonim explained, now you have the obligation to identify two things. Number one, you have to identify how many Shtaris there were, and number two, you have to identify how they were stored. Ask the Mefarshim, and this is very much part of what we're going to learn in the next parak, normally one siman is enough. Why here do we have to have two simanim? The number and how they were stored. So Mefarshim explain very nicely. They say as follows. Of course, usually, one siman is enough. However, if you're only going to come and give us one of the two simanim, the number or the way, there's an obvious question. If you really lost it, why can't you identify it perfectly by telling us both how many shtaris there were and how they were stored? So here, the fact that you didn't give us the entire picture gets us suspicious. Are you really the one that lost it? And that's why here, if you don't give us the whole picture, we're both simanim, we wouldn't return the shtaris. Says the Gemara. Rishimim Gamliel Aimer, as we learned in this part of the Mishnah, Echad Alayv Mishloisha, if there's one Laiva and three Malvin, and we find such three documents, Talach is Yachsel Laiva. We return them to the Laiva. Four, says the Gemara. This Akadatach, the Malvininu, if we're going to say it's the Malvin, the three separate Malvin lost the star, my boy Gaba Adadi, how did these three stars from three different Malvin come together? Asked the Gemara. Maybe they all came to Beis Din to certify the shtaris at the same time. Says the Gemara, the Mekayimi, these shtaris are already certified. Ask the Gemara, Dilma Meyada the Sofer Nafel, maybe three different Malvin came to the Sofer, came to the Beis Din at the exact same time, and the Sofer dropped them at the same time. And that's why, even though they represent three different Malvin, they're really by the Malvin, not by the Laiva. Answers the Gemara, Laimashi Inshikyum Yod the Safra. It's very important to the Malva to get his shtar certified. And he doesn't let the cipher hold on to it. He stands there until he finishes it and takes it back. So the chances that the cipher has three shtaris from three different Malvim that he dropped at the same time is very remote. Shloisha Shalavim Echad. But if there's one Malva and three Loivim, that's clearly indication that it's the Malva that dropped it. Yachsel Malva. These Akadatach, if we're going to say, says the Gemara, the Lovininu, that the Loivim are the ones that dropped it, again the question, how did they come at the same time? Ask the Gemara, Dilma Lemichtavinu Asli. As we've learned so many times, it's the Loivim who has the responsibility to have the Shtar written, and maybe the Loivim came to Beis Din at this, these three different Loivim came to the Beis Din at the same time. Says the Gemara, the Ksivit Tlasiyat Safri. The three different Soifim that wrote these three documents. Again, ask the Gemara, V'demel Kiyumi Asli, maybe the three Loivim came to Beis Din to certify the Shtar all at the same time. Answers the Gemara, Malva Mekayim Shtari, Loivim Mekayim Shtari. Who's interested in getting his Shtar certified? The Malva, because he wants to be able to collect. The Loivim doesn't need it certified. To him, it's a disservice. So to say that the Loivim came to Beis Din to have the Shtar certified, that three Loivim came at the same time, Loivim don't bring shtaris to Beis Din to be certified. Im yesh imam sepinus, if there are sepinus written to the shtar, then the halach is yas mashem sepinus. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yibra ba'Abba, Amar Rav, simpen hayoyitz midakse de malva. As we said it in the Mishnah, simpen means a shiver. If the malva has a shiver, ap ishikos b'ksav yodai, even though the shiver is written in the handwriting of the malva, ena ela, we say that it's not serious, upasol, and if the malva still has the shtar choiv of the shiver, he has a right to collect the obligation. Continues Rav Yirmiyah. Leimi by kosbik sav yad soifer. Certainly, if the soifer is the one that wrote the shiver, so having a shiver is not an indication, says Rav Yirmiyah, that the choiv was paid, for we can say, diklameimu safris ramalei, the Kosef, as we've learned so many times. They lived in a world where people weren't expert writers. So we have a Malva who's owed money, and he knows that the Loiva won't pay him the Chayv unless he gives him a receipt. So he happens to meet a Cipher, and he tells the Cipher, write for me the Shiver that I should have prepared for when the Malva will pay, that I'll be able to give him the Shiver. El afilu kosbik sav yodai. Even in a situation where the Cipher with a malva is able to write his own shiver, so we don't have this concern that he found a cipher puzzle. The fact that he finds a shiver doesn't mean anything. Why? Because he is concerned Dilma Misram V'Asu Ben Ishmashes. Maybe the loiva, and this is the Pasha Peshat in the Gemara, maybe the loiva is going to arrive Friday afternoon to pay. Now, Friday afternoon Ben Ishmashes, you can't write, the Malva can't write anymore. And the loiva, as I said a moment ago, won't pay if he doesn't get a shaver. So the Malva in anticipation, goes and prepares a shaver, so the loiva shouldn't have an excuse not to pay. Dilma Misrami V'Asi Ben Ishmashes, the Kaparali. The Malva says to himself, I won't be able to give him a shaver. He'll refuse to pay. And therefore he says, let me prepare a shaver, the key, so that whenever he pays me, I'll be able to pay him. And therefore, if a Malva finds a shaver in his documents, it doesn't prove in any way that the loan was paid. A different pshat I saw in the Shalom Balocha in the Spanish Mash is an interesting pshat. He says from the Arizal, he says, even though the Arizal was always careful to daven mincha in the proper time, if a loiva would come to him ready to pay off an obligation, he would delay davening mincha to help the loiva make sure that the loiva paid up his debt in a timely fashion. And that's why the malva prepares the shaver not to delay his davening mincha. Tanan asked the Gemara on Rabbi Yimya, we just learned in our Mishnah, if somebody finds a shaver in his documents, and he doesn't recall what is the status of this shaver, he should do what a dish simpon says. And says the Gemara, there it's a unique situation. Could Amar of Safra, shenimtza ben shtarais kruim. He didn't just find it amongst his file. He found it amongst his documents that are ripped up, which seems to indicate that this represents a shtar that was paid up, and that's why he put it in those files. Hachinami, shenimtza ben shtaris kruim. Ask the Gemara another question, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Tashma, nimtza lecha ben shtaroysof. If somebody finds amongst his document, shtaris shal Yosef ben Shimon perua. Yosef ben Shimon's obligation to me is paid up, and he, two different Yosef ben Shimon's, owed him money, but he doesn't remember which one owed him the money. He has to consider we can't know and he can't collect from either of them. So we see that the shaver is followed. Kramer of Safra, Shinimtsa ben Shtaris Kruim. As we just said, it's because he was found between those files. Hakanami Shinimtsa ben Shtaris Kruim. So I saw Rashi explains, how could the Shtar Choy be a good Shtar Choy? We learned that if there are two people with the same name, you have to make another identifying mark to make the shtar a good shtar. So Rashi says that the shtar had the grandfather's name, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov, on one of them, and the other one, Yosef ben Shimon ben Reuven. But this shtar, that was the shtar. So that's why the shtar is a valid shtar, but the shaver didn't have that kind of identification. So since we don't know which shtar was paid, and it's found, as the Gemara says, ben shtaros of kruim, he can't collect the debt. Tashma, shvua, the Gemara says that if one Yosim, or one group of Yosimim, want to collect a debt from another group of Yosimim, they have to make a shvuah, shlo pekadnu abba, that our father did not tell us that this debt was satisfied. We didn't find a document indicating that this debt was paid. So we see that if you find such a shtar, then you can't collect. And so the Gemara again, third time, I'm Rav Safra Shnitzim and Shteres of Kruim. Tashma, Simpin Sheeshel of Edom, a shaver that has on an Edom, Yiskayim B'chaysamav. So we see that if the Edom certify it, then you can't collect. Rav Yirmiyah says, you can. And it says, the Gemara, what the Bryce means to say is, Yiskayim M'chaysamav. We should try to find the Edom that signed the shaver, the Shalina Lulasadi, and we asked them, Iperua Lai Perua, did you witness this debt being paid or not? Taisus points out, it's an important point. Taisus says, Al Gemara has identified two different words for the same document, for a shaver. Sometimes it's called a shaver, and sometimes it's called a simpan. What's the difference? Taisus says, when it's found by the loiva, it's called a shaver. When it's found by the malva, it's called a simpan. What does a simpan mean? We had the word in Masechta Ksubis. Simpan means it's a blemish. And that's Pshat in our Gemara. If a shaver is found by a malva, it raises the question, was the chayv paid or not? Tashma, Simpan Sheesh Lov Edim. Again, the Brisa says, if there's a star shev that is on an Edim, kosher. Ask the Gemara, my Edim, Edikim. Hachanam Mistabra, Midik Tani Sefer. The Sefer of that Brisa says, the Sheena Lov Edim, but if there are no Edim, then the Shaver is Possel. My Ena Lov Edim. What does the Brisa mean when it says Ena Lov Edim? Elam the Leka Lov Edim Klal, that there are no witness sign to it at all. Tzrich Lamein with the Possel. Obviously, such a star is Possel. Elalaf, it must be Edikim. And we're saying, if Edim testify that the Shaver is good, we follow it, otherwise not. Gufa, and repeats the Gemara's Brisa, Simpin Shiesel of Edim, Yiskayim B'chaysamav. Enel of Edim, if there are no Edim signed to it, the Yoitz V'tachsi Deishlish, but it wasn't being held by the Malva or the Loiva, it was being held by a third party, or Shiyotz L'achachitim Shtoiris, or it was on the bottom of the Shtar Choyf, then we say that's kosher. Yotz V'tachsi Deishlish, and now the Gemara explains each halacha. If this shoiver was being held by a shalish, it's a proof that the shoiver, that the debt was actually paid. And what happened here was the emnei malva l'shalish, that the malva handed over the star to the shoiver to the shalish, that he should hold it as a proof that the debt was paid. Yotzel the achachitim shtaris nami. Similarly, if the shoiver is written on the bottom of the star choiv, it's a proof that that choiv was paid. The elav, the priya, if not for the fact that it was paid, lehavale marale shtori, the malva would never allow for shtori to be, for shoiver to be placed on the bottom of the shtar choiv, which would put in question the status of the money that's owed to him. Harun loch shnayim oichsen, harun loch shnayim oichsen, harun loch shnayim oichsen.
Why is the format?